Okay, this is session number 49, recorded on August 20th, 2007, and this is Side A. And we're finishing up with the top-down chart, which you can see on our Fatty Communion site, or go to fivebody.com and look under Chart and Image Archive and click on top-down chart. So we didn't get section 7 and 8 of the chart done, right?
We kind of breezed through it. There's probably a little detail left.
So we have here in level 7, it's features the ground. In 1977, this is a term Bob Marshall uses, mass man, which is also a term in the bottom-up chart, right? Uses that there.
Right.
He pairs up.
But it uses it in the next level on the bottom-up chart.
Right. It's in the second coming ground, level 8, and it's the technological art form, and the highbrow art form is Furry Lint in the bottom-up chart. This one he has popular government or front is the solar government with the universe stage. Now, what he does here, since it's a global theater, he presents a figure which is sort of like a figure ground. You know what I mean? But it's a fake figure ground, or it's not as powerful as the real ground. So when you have underground, solar, United Nations, 1945, laser beam, 1960, mass man, 1977, and then second coming, in brackets, today, the figures under the popular government front are national, in brackets, earth stage, then world, in brackets, solar stage, then solar, in brackets, universe stage, and the eighth level, universe, in brackets, mythic stage. They are a figure ground. You got a nation as an actor on a stage, sort of like a ground.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a theatrical, that's because it's a global theater. Whereas in the global village, the figures were just straight out a front or figure, like Rome, House of Habsburg, Britain, and America. He was trying to show that the image of the theater was a figure, and that it was moving into a non-theatrical situation. I'm not sure. A merger.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what mass man is. I'm not sure. National. In other words, if the theater is really the word that makes the market, which has no figure ground, it's almost like the figure and the ground have merged, then to look like there is a figure and a ground, you have a stage effect.
Mm-hmm.
So the first stage effect is national, a nation in relation to a bunch of other nations. And then the sixth level, it's a world government in relation to a solar government. That's a stage situation.
Yeah, everybody's noticing the world government. And the solar stage, or the solar government's creeping up from behind, but they're not talking about it on the nightly news or anything.
Right, but it's kind of visible.
Yeah, well, you probably have artists that are doing stuff around it, like Spielberg might be doing like a Star Wars movie or something, but people just see that. People don't see that as being the hidden ground creeping up. They just see it as being fantasy entertainment.
Right. They don't know that it is the actual ground.
A metaphor for the ground.
Yeah, not as powerful as the actual ground, which in the sixth level is the laser beam.
And by the way, I think I know why Bob
Marshall
put the laser beam there when he was talking to you. Because I think, remember last week I was making a big deal, I don't get why the laser beam's a secret government. And I tried to run down different possibilities. But then all of a sudden it clicked in, it's obvious to me. With the laser beam, we get the first holograms, where they etch into the plate the image that you can turn the plate around, look at it from different angles, and see the object three-dimensional. So it's a metaphor for the fact that the global theater is, the mixed corporate media is becoming a hologramic environment that we're living inside of.
Yeah,
so it's a metaphor basically for the hologram.
Right, and that's what I would have told them, because we'll see that in my chart, this hologram aspect. So in the hologram is like an environment we're all inside of, but we can't see the hologram. So we think we're looking at actors on a stage.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a split, because it says in the sixth level, where the laser beam is the ground, it says decentralized solar government.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next level is decentralized universal government. Those are symptoms, but they aren't the cause of that. They are effects of, in the case of decentralized universal government, the ground is causing it. That's the mass man. The mass man is like a hologram. It's an image coming out of the White House,
mm-hmm.
that everybody lives inside of.
Yeah.
And it swallows the whole universe.
Right.
It's bigger than first nature, or it involves the attention of the brains of the world, with the people's brain. They're inside it. So that's why the universal government is kind of like a stage with the solar playing on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
That all is a deflection, or a attempt to find a separation from the imploded condition of the mass man hologram.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pretending you're not the actor. You're needing an idea that there's an action going on outside of you, and that's a stage. So you'll see solar operations inside the universe. I mean, that's sort of like Star Wars, where, you know, you have this battle somewhere in the universe and a bunch of planets, but the ground of it is a universe, right?
Right.
It's vast, and they might zap through it a bit occasionally in their battles in hyperspace or something, but it's the idea that there's a universe bigger, and a little battle between the Empire and whoever those characters were in Star Wars, they're having a battle on some obscure place in the universe, and they have an empire is what they're up against. That's against a universe. But the point of Bob Marshall's chart is that the universe itself is inside a matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what mass man means. So that's why the idea of the Star Wars taking place on a larger universal stage, that is still a rearview mirror image.
Hmm.
So that's why he has, in Mass Man 1977, decentralized universal government, but then he adds this other point, left hemisphere versus right hemisphere. You're inside the world brain. You're inside the extension of the central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the solar, television, computer, and satellite level. So you're not inside, really, you're not just a universal government, you're inside the brain. And that would be a biological expression of this discarnate hologram, which you wouldn't know how to categorize.
And would it make sense to say that our internal self is flipped outside, and our physicality is flipped inside?
Well, that's what McLuhan said happened under TV. But now the whole planet is flipped outside, because the satellite is an extension of the planet. So our chemical bodies, inner and outer, are inside the satellite situation, and the satellite situation is starting to flip into the second coming. Now note the stage, the theatrical figure ground, which is under the word figures and then popular government front, is universal, is what everybody sees, and the stage it's on top of is and playing on is the mythic stage. And the mythic stage would be something like the an awareness of the imploded word makes a market, or the hologram.
Mm-hmm.
So the technological government is a satellite, which projects a hologramic effect, because it's the ground for the interplay of all the previous media, radio, movies, television, computer, and bulldozers. So then the symptoms on that is devil versus God, state versus church. Those are different aspects of mythic operations, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Devil versus God is a mythic stage. State versus church, for people who aren't religious, the state becomes a super super image for people to live inside of, and they want to define the image as either super secular government or super religious or supernatural government. And then the competing terms, what Harold Innes called a military bureaucracy versus a temple bureaucracy. Temple would be more like church. State would be more like military bureaucracy. So these old environments are figures, and they're projecting devil and God on each other as they look for allies. And the result is Armageddon, or a massive war, huge war. So I think he's getting at that, that the idea in the Bible that there will be this war in the Middle East and it'll be Armageddon, and the whole world gets affected by it, is puny compared to the actual Armageddon that's happening on all bigger levels than just a projection from a book or little tribal groups in the Middle East fighting. To get to the level of a huge Armageddon, beyond the flipping of our inside outside, you have to have the previous stage of left hemisphere versus right hemisphere. It was in the 70s that it became popular to discuss whether something was left hemisphere or right hemisphere.
Yeah.
It's almost like the jargon came in because people were no longer inside their central nervous system, no longer dealing with the extension of the central nervous system. They were dealing with an extension of the planet and the media in it, which is bigger than just extensions of our parts of our brain.
Yeah.
Left or right hemisphere.
So, I think the guy wrote that book, the Julian James.
Oh yeah, that was the origins of the breakdown of the bicameral mind, I think.
Yeah, that was about the battle between the left and right hemispheres at a different stage of the evolution of language.
Right, and it became a theory. I mean, it was something that people could get a handle on because they were no longer inside their brains. So someone could talk about different states of our evolution as it affected the brain, because the bicameral mind was the multi-voiced, hearing many voices before the literate mind came in.
Mm-hmm.
And the consolidation of the literate mind, or we could say left hemisphere, was the breakdown of the bicameral or left or right hemisphere mind. Bicameral is right hemisphere.
I don't think writing was coming in during that period when Julian James wrote about it. He was writing about, I think, pre-Homeric times, which was verbal and everybody had to learn how to remember everything because you didn't have the tools to write it down.
Right, and remember, the writing is going on 1,000 years before the Greek situation in 500 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
Writing is like, goes back to maybe 2,000 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
So he may be talking about that period up to the Homeric period. You're saying that he says that part of the breakdown of the bicameral mind moving out of the multi-voices, hearing voices, was the oral memory?
Well, no, it was the establishing the identity as an individual apart from the collective hive mentality or whatever they experienced before the ego developed. But it was basically the beginning, the origins of the individualized ego in relation to the other, the voice in the head.
Yeah, that's not necessarily the phonetic, that's before the phonetic effect, but it's within the period of writing.
Yeah, I guess there was writing going on because during Homer's time, remember the people they had to, you went
Homer
through
Homer was the first guy to write it down.
He was the first guy to write it down, but before Homer, it was all memorized. You had to go through all this extensive training to remember the lineage of the ancestors going back, you know, thousands of years or whatever.
But there was writing happening at that time. It took a long time for the transition.
Yeah.
There was writing before Homer.
Yeah.
It's just around Homer's time, he decided, well, I better write this down. It was starting to get more consolidated.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a vague transitional period.
Right.
But the,
so then bring us up to the 1970s, 1980s, we're talking about the left hemisphere versus the right hemisphere. We're talking something on a scale that's it resonates to the idea that Gillian James was talking about the corpus callosum and the left and the right hemispheres of the chemical brain learning how to talk to each other or fight each other. But now we're talking about this similar idea, but it's a different scale.
Right. Gillian James can present the thesis because a replay of hearing voices was done by the baby boomers with all the drugs they were taking. So they could entertain the possibility that the mind was more plastic or subliminally influenced.
Well, he was specifically studying schizophrenia, which has been around forever.
Right.
And he actually, I think he thought that schizophrenia was a remnant of that period of time when the left and right brains were figuring out how to talk to each other.
Right, but you had R.D. Lang coming up in the 60s out of the Tavistock Institute in England saying that schizophrenia was not really a problem. It was just someone working out their own personality transformations. So he was controversial in refuting the categories of Freudian and psychiatric clinical work. And that was starting to loosen up in the 60s, and R.D. Lang became pretty famous about questioning those categories. Mm-hmm. But that was only because the biological brain didn't need to be controlled as much as it did in the first half of the 20th century and the 19th century, because we were actually moving into a broader landscape, is what McLuhan would say, so that people could play with their brains.
Yeah.
And there wouldn't be such a censorious, judgmental, moralizing action in relation to social integrity or social respectability. It was loosening up. Mm-hmm. And then you could say that the release of a lot of mental patients in the United States in the 70s was the collapse of the psychiatric model, and then drugs took over, and then the programming of the brain through medicinal stuff that led into a phenomenon like Prozac, that was an acceptance of the programming of the chemical brain, because we were living in a wider landscape, mm-hmm. which was an imploded landscape that Bob Mars was calling mass man.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to get the abductee phenomenon coming in. That's a decentralizing the universal government. People are free to make up their own experiences of the larger universe.
Well, the abductee had been coming in since the late 40s, when television was coming in anyway.
Yeah, but it wasn't a mass phenomenon as it was in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many people, and then, you know, there's histories of the seeing, like George Adamski seeing UFOs, maybe talking to somebody in the 50s, and then being abducted in the post-Barney Hill, Betty Hill phase in the 60s and 70s, and then many people claiming to be abducted in the 80s. It keeps loosening up, and the people get more and more involved in the act.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the breakdown of the...
Now it's to the point where if you don't know someone who's been abducted, you're just not getting out of the house much.
that's right. And, you know, when I spoke at the UFO Congress in August 99 in Mesquite, Nevada, I met some people after over the week, and I had explained what the Boudians had done to us and this and that, and they said many people there felt that many people in their neighborhood were aliens. They had no problem thinking that they talk to aliens, they come and visit them, their neighbors are aliens. Like you said, you aren't getting out enough. So that was in 99. I mean, can you imagine that idea talked about in the 50s? It wouldn't happen. The acceptance of this is my point, is the acceptance of the universal stage being in your neighborhood is what Bob Marshall's trying to get at.
Mm-hmm.
Solar government would be battles within the solar system, or Dr. Peter's battles between the particle beam on the moon and Russian cosmospheres. That's recent solar ghetto stuff. And the stage for that, the larger landscape, is aliens coming through wormholes and people having contact with them. And all that is seen as a theatrical image because the real ground is mass man, which is a hyper abduction of the whole planet into one little matrix.
Mm-hmm.
So that the fad of being abducted, that's your chemical body communicating with a universal government landscape.
Mm-hmm.
That's acceptable.
Well,
you know what I mean?
But the
idea that you've been abducted into a matrix was not understood in the 70s.
No.
Phil K. Dick tried to write about it.
Yeah.
He was considered an eccentric writer.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the matrix idea specifically seems to come in with the computer.
With the computer, yeah, which the personal computer, which is the hologram. It's computer is personalizing the hologram. So the hologram that's caused in the 70s, what he calls, Bob Marshall calls the mass man situation, is now personalized by the 90s. You have your own personal hologram, which gets to what the Matrix movie tried to show. So then,
let me ask you something. If we never got computers and satellite, if television was the end of the road and nobody was smart enough to figure anything out beyond that, would television eventually have led to the mass man phenomena, or does it have to have the computer and satellite there to create the mass man?
Well, you have here global theater and goes from radio up to satellite. Mass man, did you ask, was the term mass man?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or did you call it a hologram?
No, I called it the mass man.
Yeah. No, mass man begins with radio. That's the electric discarnate fate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the interplay of media, environments that happens with the computer and then the satellite as ground, that I think creates the idea of living in whole environments. Whereas the radio and TV, you're just inside a hologram inside your brain, but you're not aware of it, so you wouldn't have battles over the left and right hemisphere. In other words, the whole sensibility of the 50s, that's the TV, that's the mass man under TV conditions. And that's an update of the radio mass man. So that's why, you know, Finnegan's Wake can be appropriate to later developments. But we're going to see where I refine that in what I call holopathic replays in my charts. But the solar government, the levels 5, 6, 7, and 8 are all mass man. But they're each one is a refinement of the mass man, so that the laser beam changes the number 5, so laser beam in 6 makes television become the figure, technological government, but it's moving into a matrix or hologram kind of effect at a more obvious level.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you wouldn't have the hologram effect under television or radio conditions, but they are, in McLuhan terms, a mass man.
Yeah, but it seems like television is the end of the road, and it's the hidden ground for level 6, 7, and 8, because tactility, you know, if we take...
No, that's true. That electricity begins with the telegraph, is the electric effect, and that's it's all electric once you're into the global theater phase.
So you've merged to space and distance and time. You're in tactility. If you truly were cognized the tactile state of it's the interplay of all the senses, but it's none of the senses. So if you were just experiencing tactility, you shifted your identity from the sensory level down to the tactile level. You wouldn't know, you wouldn't have a sense of duration, you wouldn't have a sense of direction, an orientation. It would be consciousness without an object. So everything else that comes after it, after TV is I'm not sure if it's a development or an overlay.
Okay, I know what you're getting at. You know, on my chart, you'll see it goes from 60 to 90, and that's the period of the Android meme, what you have is it ends with television, but the computer and the satellite now allow technology to become its own entity and appear to be on its own evolution. And you couldn't have done that in television zone because that's just an extension of us. But when you extend the whole planet and then the computer extensions speed that up or fine-tune it, then you get into the environment being in the planet being inside another environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that environment becomes a living thing that goes on its own evolution. Maybe a pseudo-evolution, but it goes through changes. So you're describing the effect of television on the consciousness, but what about television, radio, and all the previous media being extended themselves?
Mm.
And they're put inside an environment.
Yeah.
That's what the satellite does. It puts the planet and all previous media environments, including the subject-object merger effect of the tactile television, or radio, or telegraph, or telephone.
Mm-hmm.
See, so there's no you that's involved. We've got environments that are being extended and interplayed and imploded. So that becomes what's left of the chemical body. That becomes the habitat,
you know,
that the chemical body thinks it's in. So that's why the laser beam is the transition point.
Hmm.
It's not a human government. It's a technological government. So it's implying the beginning of the android meme.
Right.
We have three phases. What'd you say?
Yeah, and I see it says 1960, the laser beam, and that's right where your tiny note chart begins, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so this is Bob Marshall intuiting. I wasn't using the word android meme back then, but I was probably babbling on, trying to talk about technology going on its own course. Or seeming to, in the Philip K. Dick mode, and this is what he came up with. He knew that something, we didn't get to this point last week, I don't think, talking about the laser beam, the sixth level, but the laser beam, the fact that technology becomes the ground, it's a bit different than human secret societies, right?
Yeah.
So it's the technology itself becomes the government.
Yeah. But nevertheless, you say that last week you said that the Secret Council of Ten doesn't really become get traction. It loses traction for, you know, during World War II, and it doesn't get traction until like the late 70s, early 80s. Now that's the human element coming in, and you're saying that they had some kind of control on the one hand. On the other hand, you're saying that they don't.
Yeah, you got the dates wrong. There is no Secret Council of Ten. Until after World War II.
Yeah.
There's just elites before that, before World War II. You could say there's Secret Council of Ten, but not the way I mean it.
Well, I asked you how far they went back, and you said they come out of the Fondo, but you're just saying you're saying that.
But that's the previous phases. That's Venice, the Fondo, and the World, League of Nations, 1918.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the solar government is the beginning of dealing with moving out into space. And that's after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that possibility before World War II. They weren't thinking that way. I mean, maybe a few H.G. Wells or science fiction guys were talking about it, but the actual power mechanism was not there yet. But it was potentially there after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And so rocketry got it really exploded and developed in the 40s and early 50s. So the Secret Council 10 formed around that. That's why they're called the solar government.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're the solar ground in 45. But by 1960, outer space is obsolete once you're inside the tactile spaces of television.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be another reason why he has national, this figure in Earth Age is ground. These are sort of images of human control, but it's people recognizing that there's a hidden government within the human control. But once you get the laser beam, there isn't any human control anymore.
So you're saying by that time, even the Secret Council of Ten is ineffective?
Oh yeah, that's right. I write about that. They become, they're tetrad managers. They don't do much in the 50s. They just monitor with the developments. They don't let the people run. As it says in the bottom up chart, nationalism becomes a figure.
Yeah, well, but no, I thought you said they lost, they didn't became ineffective when money disappeared because of credit.
Yeah, that's at the human chemical body level.
In the late 70s and 80s.
Not in the late 80s. Okay.
The, the credit people, the bankers got in trouble, and people with hard wealth, like, you know, gold that weren't banking on credit, all of a sudden you guys had power because you had the gold.
Yeah, and that didn't last long. 10 years, that was Prince Charles.
What ten-year period?
1980-1990.
Yeah, so, but how could you even be effective then if the laser beam meant that the humans had no, weren't incapable of being effective because the machines were operating the machine show?
And that's what's called the Pentad Manager. The Pentad Manager starts in the late 60s. If you read up the Orphic Ante.
So the Secret Council of Ten apparently was running around thinking that there was something they were doing, but they actually were ineffective.
They weren't doing anything since the 50s.
And even in the 80s, they weren't doing anything.
No, there was no Secret Council of Ten. I disbanded in 88, but it was weakened in the late 60s and early 70s. That's why I say it was real hell being a part of it in the 70s and early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But
what were they trying to hold together? What were they doing?
Nothing.
Well, then why did they exist? Why even talk about them?
Well, it's like us. It's like human bodies. But they watch humans run around taking over governments, taking over national governments, solar governments, and world governments, and thinking there was something there, but they weren't.
So they became like people watching a tennis match on television.
Oh, yeah.
They're just observers.
Yeah, and you read my Up the Orphic Ante.
So they had no power, so there was nothing charismatic or powerful about the Secret Council of Ten.
They had the power of knowing that people would rush into, the citizens or peasants or managers would run into positions of power and get confused by the fact there was nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the Secret Council of Ten understood.
Give them any leverage anything with?
I want to hear what you just said, but I want go back and read the up the Orphic Ante and see how I spell it out, the tetrad phase and then the pentadic phase. And I even have it in the McLuhan essay, where McLuhan intuits the tetradic phase in the early 50s, and then the pentadic phase, where we watch the android meme, the government, or the technology, act out its sense of running things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what did you just say that I drowned out? You were laughing there.
Well, I'm just being sort of belligerent and keep being...
Yeah, but it's good that you're trying to understand what I'm saying, because this is the perceptual breakthrough.
Well, when you talk about the Secret Council of Ten, people, I think it evokes the idea that it's some kind of Illuminati that's been progressed to some new stage of evolution, and that it has some kind of either charisma or power, or people say, well, boy, I wished I was part of that because it'd be like being better than being a 007. I mean, you'd be really, that's where the action was, you know, that's where people were really, you know, knew what was going on, and you know, and now you're saying, but it didn't really matter whether they existed or not, because they were ineffectual.
That's right, and that's the meme I've been putting out since I've been on the radio 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was doing. Like, I was saying, you people can't believe that someone who's part of that, quote, Illuminati zone is right here on your radio station talking to you. So I spent many years explaining why that could happen, because we were not in control anymore. Nobody was. And by the late 80s, we're watching the android meme break up.
Mm-hmm.
So, which we'll get into that on my chart. But so this is the point. When you have a global
family. So the Secret Council of Ten just sort of becomes a club, I guess. And you call each other and you go, yeah, there's nothing we can do about it today either.
That's right. That's what it was. It was a bunch of 10-cent phone calls. but to quote that movie, The Formula. But here's the thing. Is that, as McLuhan says, history ends in 1945. That's a very deep statement. Think of the chemical body and all its history. Human evolution ends in 45. All right, that's what we have here in Bob Marshall's chart. The secret government is human in the global village situation of the last 2,000 years, and it completes by 1945, and then you have a theater. And the theater is people, is the citizens getting involved in old forms of human government and thinking they're still viable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you have a national government in relation to an Earth stage. That is a figment of the rearview mirror. That's the level, that's the idea that there's still human control. Now, in retrospect, there never was any human control over the last 50 years, as you've seen what's happened to government. It's just been chaos for 50 years all over the world in different governments.
Yeah.
They come and they go. And so it also happens in the economic management of the economy, the global economy. So that's what we have, decentralized world government, collapse of world government in the solar fifth level, then collapse of the solar government by 1960, and then collapse of the or decentralization of the universal government by 77. If you look at the Android Memes and Narconi diaries, you'll see my father telling me this stuff from the late 50s into early 1964 about.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see what he's telling me. He's telling me that you got to do something different, Bob. The solar government, T-Carlton, is useless now.
Hmm.
And we're wrestling with that. You can go look at the diary entries.
Mm-hmm.
And for that period, 59 to 16, I've made the René dialogues all in one section. I put them in Flipside magazine, and they're all like sequentially after each other. It's the only sequential part as they were in terms of how they're presented in Flipside magazine, which was presented discontinuously, right?
Right.
You actually see the sequence from early 50s up to 64 approximately of one entry after another, so I show the evolution,
yeah,
of what happens to the Secret Council 10. So that the laser beam is the new government, and that's the beginning of the Android meme.
Right. Well, some people might argue that the president doesn't really have any power. He just he's just there, like you say, to keep the image of the White House circulating around the planet. But nevertheless, he may not have any real power in the sense of really being able to make to create an agenda to be for the benefit of human culture on the planet and actually be able to put that plan into effect and make a real difference. But he is in a position where he can wave his hand and the military salutes and then goes off to war, which is a lot of power for someone who doesn't have any power.
Yeah, no, it's a power to interfere and fight over the scraps. As McLuhan said back in the 60s, all there is left to do for humans is to fight over the scraps of old technological landscapes. The military deals with an obsolete military effort or pursuit of geographical power, but it has no power in terms of the economy.
Mm.
You know, taking power over land and countries is irrelevant. Now, people still, in their frustration, will flounder around and carry out these, as McLuhan would say, endless repertory of theatrical replays of previous events in history when there was a chemical body.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the population in the world sits and enjoys it as a play.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they are affected by the crossfire, and the crossfire is like roaming around the planet, picking off guerrillas and terrorists and nations and dictators, and that's what you've had the last 50 years.
Right. Well, was the Secret Council of 10 ever in a position where they could interfere with the agenda of the president, or they could interfere with the management of the economy?
No. They knew that those landscapes had a life of their own, and that's what any major manager says.
Well, were they able to profit from the knowledge?
The knowledge of what?
Their superior knowledge of what really was happening on the planet.
Well, they understood what was happening. They had personally had to adapt to it. They had to adjust their psyche to it. But because they were aware of it since the 50s, they had longer time to adapt to it. You've seen most...
But I guess you're implying that they were beyond greed, or they saw that there was no necessity to be greedy, because if they were in a position of power, then they could channel, you know, huge sums of resources around.
They didn't have to. It was done by the Android meme itself. But the thing is that the Secret Council 10, the part that people imagine that they did have, is comfort. They could go anywhere they want on the planet. So they could enjoy access to different parts of the world and all the pleasures and opportunities there, but they...
And they had use of all the equipment, ships and planes and...
Yeah, whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
But...
So there was no limit to their material wealth.
Yeah, other than boredom. I mean, it's hard for a human to enjoy the world without having a sense of purpose and create some meaning. So
yeah.
The Secret Council 10 members and their families had the same dilemma that every other human was having since the 50s. But the average human, he had to stay and work and get his daily bread and maybe get a vacation once a year for a couple of weeks. The Secret Council of Ten, they could distract themselves as much as they wanted to every day.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to work.
But did they have technologies available to them that were not available to the commercial public?
Yeah, a little bit, but not too far ahead. It was no big deal. Once you got a plane, reasonable plane by the 60s, that's good enough. You get a better plane, but you still just... The places you fly to are still the same.
Right.
You know, you can get there faster, maybe. Matter of fact, you might start collecting old planes and go around in the 1930s plane just to experience that as a different kind of sensory involvement. So it's exactly what McLuhan said. You know, a lot of you can replay any time in space, any time in historical cultural moment you wanted to.
Yeah.
But you could do it.
I'm surprised they didn't get involved with drugs in the way that John Lilly did, just simply out of boredom. You know, he had his trust fund, so he never had to worry about money. He was a brilliant guy, and looking for a way to keep from staying bored, so he just was shooting up and traveling in inner space every day.
But wait, no, Sea Cow's 10 members, they took drugs. Mm. They played with their minds and brains, too. What do you mean? Why do you assume they didn't?
Well, I don't know.
Some of them were heroin addicts and very good at it.
Uh-huh.
They didn't lose control of it because they had the money to keep it, to kind of do it, you know, like a yogi.
Right. Was that a phase that you went through?
No comment.
Because you're just so damn lucid, you know. Like John Lilly said, if you wiped out, if it killed off your brain cells, it killed off just the right ones.
Well, the thing is that there were identity crises within the Secret Council 10. There always were assassination attempts and somebody getting frustrated with what they thought was the power landscape and they wanted to do something about it, and they would go and try to take over. They'd end up against the same wall, but they'd kill a few people. And there were several times, as I say, when people ask me if I ever took drugs, I did, but I didn't know what they were. And I was poisoned a few times or took things that I didn't plan on taking.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what I've had, but there was the human vanity and its ego battles continue no matter what the actual facts are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the technical facts of post-power. So the and that's enjoyable for some people. They want to have their fights. They want to have the drama of knocking off another faction, the Secret Council 10. But generally it was pretty crummy mentally for everybody from the late 70s up till 1990.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's fun about Mae Brussels' tapes. She would document us at least a little bit. She could see that people were falling out of windows and being murdered all over the place. She wondered why.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of infighting going on all levels.
Did you clue her in, throw her a few tidbits to research?
Yeah, I would. I offered her key parts of Take Today. I sent them to her, talked to her about it. McLuhan's book, Take Today, The Executive's Dropout, but she read, she said, I can't understand it.
So she never figured out who you were?
No.
She just saw you as an odd sort of companion who became part of her life.
Yeah, she saw me as someone who really understood the people that she was talking about. I knew the names and could add stuff about them, and also I could give her other names to look into.
Did you hold?
She thought I was a good student of her.
Yeah. Did you hold back, or did you try to tell her everything you knew?
No, I wasn't going to tell her what I knew, but I tried to see if she could entertain, her mind could entertain the vistas of the android meme, and I started that by giving her McLuhan material, but it didn't mean anything to her.
Mm.
So she remained back there in basically in the 19th century, like LaRouche. That's where I have them on my chart.
Yeah.
Studying 19th century world government possibilities.
Yeah.
But the so do you see the point here? The national and then Earth stage. That's a figure ground. World is figure and then solar stage on the sixth level. Then solar and universal stage is a figure ground in the Massman period. Those are human projections of what they think they're doing to get power and to have power. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what Bob Marshall means. So what's interesting, when you get to the eighth level, and you have the universal as figure, and the mythic stage, which means a virtual reality, or beginning to intuit the hologram effect as the ground, then that's still a human projection. Then what is the second coming?
Yeah, that's a good question, because obviously it evokes the idea, Christian idea, that Christ is coming back. I mean, that's what it means
to most
people.
Yes, for Christians, that's what it means. And that's probably all it means to people. But if you hear me talk about the evergreens, they add another definition of it. They say it's a time of perpetual change, and people can experience that. And then another sort of secular image was the singularity. William Irwin Thompson used to talk about the singularity as some kind of implosion or movement into a new dimension that no conceptual system or human cultural setup would be prepared for. So that's why William Irwin Thompson said we were in constant catastrophe.
Well, did this happen at some time in the past? Because the second coming implies that this is a replay of something that happened once before.
Right. No, well, Thompson, talking about the singularity, he felt that that was happening in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, somewhere in there. And other people projected UFO contact. There was all kinds of cults that popped up with something like the second coming could be the aliens who manufactured us are coming back. You know, some update of the Zechariah Sitchin scenario. That was a meme around that people were waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Kahootek, that comet in 73 that Leary was making a lot of significance about when it was coming near our Earth. And then there was the Heaven's Gates people. Now, these are little human reactions to the situation, but they also are figures for an unconscious thing that's happening in the population, like
mm-hmm.
the expression of attention or pressure. So the second coming can be the return of aliens. It can be the Christian thing, and it could be the evergreens meaning of endless return of any archetype. So in the McLuhan level, the endless return of historical figures via movies or TV specials, that would be a mediated second coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of books were written in the 80s and 90s, biographies of famous people. You just look at the, going to any major bookstore, Barnes & Noble, and just look at all the books about previous historical figures in culture, politics, military, sports, or mysticism. That's a big part of the book industry, is endless replay of people in the past. One would think we're quite obsessed with everybody in the past.
Yeah.
And so that's a kind of mediated McLuhan-esque second coming. And then once you had the internet and people could find even more stuff and then speed up of travel, people could go and look into the most obscure people in cultural history and make a big deal out of them. Excavate and make a story about some artist who no one heard of 300 years ago that becomes a significant point in the history if in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that series Connections, you know, with James Burke, where he would go back over the last 1,000 or 2,000 years and show how somebody invented something here that triggered off something in another part of Europe that then led to another thing. And he'd connect everything up, and he'd have his perspective of how a new technology ended up in our laps in this 20th century.
Yeah.
Kind of like
the butterfly theory, chaos.
And the point is that people had access to all kinds of historical information faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
So they could see the patterns of previous cultures and centuries didn't have.
Right.
So there's a second coming on the cultural media-mediated level.
Yeah.
I think Bob Marshall just meant those different levels.
Uh-huh.
We could get into what I mean when we get into my chart.
Right.
So we must be near the...
We're about ready to break.
So the figure of the Second Coming is, you know, drastic, archetypal, universal forces having a fight. And that's devil versus God, state versus church, and Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
But they're figures within inside the effects of the hologram, which is the mythic stage.
But the average somnambulistic chemical body human being is just walking around, doesn't seem to be too aware that anything of that proportion is happening.
They're not walking around. They're sitting on their couch getting obese because they're enraptured with the media scape, enjoying the entertainment of the hologram, of the android meme.
Right. But if anybody knew that there were truly an Armageddon was happening or had happened, I think people would be really flipping out into all kinds of ecstatic states of ecstasy and horror.
Well, that's why pharmaceuticals took over, starting in the 70s. That's the rise of, what is it, lithium? I don't take them, so I don't know them. Lithium, Prozac, and there's all these other names, Xanax. I mean, McLuhan wrote in the 50s, no, in the 60s, I think it's in the book Culture's Our Business, he talked about how people have to take tranquilizers in the 60s just to function. So the drugging of America, of North America, and I guess the rest of the world in the West, but especially North America since we're the most advanced technologically, that has created a population and a medical establishment that just dispenses drugs to people.
Yeah.
Go around your local town. You got, Duane Reed, Rite Aid, nothing but pharmacies on every corner.
Right, yeah. I remember those earlier phases where there was like the Quaalude period and then,
Well, those were recreational drugs, weren't they?
Well, Quaaludes were handed out by doctors to women who were depressed or what have you. But those weren't really... those were sort of still sort of plant derivative type drugs. Now we're getting into the, you know, really super designer molecules.
Right, and that's...
things that never existed in nature.
Well, that's Android meme then.
Mm-hmm.
Those are virtual drugs. But the economy's built around it. So most people can't function unless they are their chemical bodies are stimulated in some form.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's true for most people, but it's obviously every other TV commercial is trying to push some kind of chemical solution down your throat.
Yeah, it's like, what's his name, Huxley's Brave New World.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that people were on Soma is such a trite scenario. Everybody's on a new kind of Soma every year over the last 30 years. And they're not as passive as presented in and drugged out as is presented in Brave New World. They're actually going around functioning because they have their other bodies, I would say. They got the TV body and chip body to interact with. And so programming the chemical body is just a minor activity.
Mm-hmm.
But from the values of people, say, 50 years ago and before, they would find it quite alienating and disorienting to see how people lived and how much Soma was advertised every day in the popular media.
Yeah.
So it's like the frog, you know, getting boiled slowly. People, the somnambulists don't know the degree that they've been boiled.
Mm-hmm.
But that's... you don't want to just be outraged that the chemical body has got boiled because you have these other bodies. And that explains, when you see these other bodies are happening, explains why people don't mind being motivated somnambulists on the chemical body level.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a small part of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's a good place to end for this section, and we'll just take a break and... we'll say anything we have to complete about this, and then we'll be moving on to Bob's formula.
Yeah, we're going to start doing my charts. So we've been doing Bob Marshall's charts for how many sessions? It's been four?
Yeah, I think so.
Three or four.
Yeah.
47, 48, no, this is 49.
Mm-hmm.
So three sessions. Or did we...
Well, we've done two sessions on the bottom up and two sessions on the top down, if I remember.
So it's four sessions. That'd be 46, 47, 48, 49.
Yeah.
And is the tape still going?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so let's end with that.
Okay.
Okay, talk to you later.
All right.